problems you can solve with one thing, just one thing. And that one thing is sleep.
You are listening to the Luminary Business Podcast, the podcast where passionate entrepreneurs and executives just like you discover how to become more prominent and influential and build a profitable business that truly matters. Join me, Todd Staples, as I unlock the foundational skills, habits, and mindset needed to produce optimal personal and business results. Hello and welcome to the show. I am your host, Todd Staples. My mission is to help you develop the skills, habits, and mindset needed to build a profitable and wildly successful business. In today's call, I have the privilege of speaking with my dear friend, Dave Logan. Dave is a New York Times number one best-selling author of the book, Tribal Leadership. He teaches leadership at an EMBA course at USC, and he's the president and co-founder of CultureSync. Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
Great, Todd. How are you?
I'm good. So happy to have you here.
It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to this.
Oh, good. Well, let me give some framework for the call. Today is the first part of a two-part series. And in the first part, I want to talk to you about your business, CultureSync, and uncover the unique approach you take that has led the company to achieve success. In the second part, we're going to talk about your own personal habits, your values, and your perspective that had led you to become successful at CultureSync and other areas of your life as well. All right, so let's just dive into part one. I want to ask some questions about your business. So what is CultureSync and what do you do for your clients?
Well, we're a management consulting firm. So you mentioned coaching and that sort of stuff. We do that. We're actually better known as a company that goes in typically at the top of rather large companies. So we're talking Fortune 500 or really big nonprofits, especially involved in healthcare. And as the name implies, we synchronize or sync the company's culture to what they want to achieve. So we sync strategy and culture, we sync structure and culture. It's all about bringing culture in line to support what that group of people wants to accomplish. That's what we do.
Okay, got it. And do you still have the tagline that I love from years back? Sync more, suck less?
Yeah, well, so when people hear sync, they typically think S-I-N-K. And we're, of course, thinking S-Y-N-C. When they see it in print, then they think to themselves, synchronize. So our newsletter for years was called Sync, S-Y-N-C, or Sync, S-I-N-K, right? So either synchronize or you will go down is what it meant. So what's been really fun about that, I think you'll appreciate it, is, as you know, Todd, you and I have been friends forever. I have a sense of humor and I tend to use bad words, not horrible words, but, you know, slightly like words that my mother would disapprove of. And so like the word suck comes up a lot, right? Like we do cultures and we talk about, it's a my life sucks culture.
Yep.
And, you know, the thing is, companies really do face a choice. They can either make their culture work or they can sink into being irrelevant and mediocre. One of those companies that nobody cares about. So we feel really passionately about that. And often passion gets conveyed in these really highbrow intellectual terms. It's like, you know, look, you can either synchronize your culture to what you want to do, or you can do what most companies do, which is ignore it and you can go down the sink. Your choice. You should choose now.
Well, I like that you bring that up, Dave, because one of the things that I like about you and I think is both entertaining and engaging when you're speaking at the events that I've been to and in, you know, in your book and in your talks that I've heard is sort of your unique approach to being very professorial on one hand, but also very real. And, it, you know, you just reminded me of that by saying you use bad words sometimes because it's jarring and there's a juxtaposition there. And I think that shows in your somewhat silly tagline, sink more, suck less. There's a real like realism to the way that you teach what you do. Can you speak to that and why you teach that way and how you found that to be effective?
Yeah, well, so I'm trained formally as a language scholar. My PhD is in a field called organizational communication. And if your listeners have stayed awake as I've gotten that far in the story, that's as bad as the story gets. By bad, I mean boring. There are kind of two types of people in my world. There are some who think that language is sacred. Typically, those are religious people, and they think that they should never use words that might bring about a bad emotion or somehow that they're dishonoring God because God made us human beings to be language-using creatures, and so it dishonors, you know, the Almighty if we're to use a bad word. That is not the world that I come from. I come from the world that says we have available to us all of these wonderful little gems, which are words and combinations of words. And there are things that are describable only by the F word, for example. Now, I never use that in, you know, on a stage, on a, in front of a Fortune 500 company when their director of HR is there. It's all about timing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like just to be able to sit back and say, wow, I've talked to a bunch of your people and they think it's really screwed up. That's much more powerful than saying on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being best, your culture came out as a 3.25. Right. And your industry norm is a 4.16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it doesn't have the same power. When you say those words that really mean something to a human, they have an impact.
Yeah. Now, again, I'm, you know, and I know you're going to be talking to Carrie later in the day. It's funny. Carrie yep. gets a reputation of being a little more unpredictable than I am.
Yep.
But the truth is, I probably have more of a potty mouth than she does.
And but just it's all for the listeners, real quick, Carrie is your partner and CEO of CultureSync.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been working with her for a few years. And so, you know, like I'm the one that in private meetings is like dropping bad words, but then she's the one who mentions a slightly bad word on a stage in front of the two people in that company who are going to care. And yep. suddenly that's all they're talking about is the fact that Carrie said, you know, something that they didn't approve of. So it's just, it's funny. You know, if you look at how business people communicate, part of what's fun is in just about every conversation, there's a point where you're talking and everybody's being very formal. And then typically, and I never do this first, the client will lean in and they'll say, you know what? It's just kind of effed up around here. Only they don't say F, they actually use the word yeah. that everybody, including you and me, are thinking. And that they're actually signaling something really important when they do that, which is the conversation has now become intimate. I don't mean intimate as in sexual, but intimate as in private, trusted, secure, confidential. And that's the signal to me that only now are we going to get to the real issues. So you can only accomplish that by the use of, in particular, that word. So when they do it, then I do it. I'm never the first one to do it because they might be religious. They might not take it well. They might be, you know, from the Midwest and people just don't communicate that way there. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you've got to be able to use the full spectrum of what we have available to us as people. That includes the bad words, not just the sacred ones.
And does that impact leadership too? So, I mean, your second book is Tribal Leadership, your second book or third book?
Oh, I don't know. I think I've written, if you count my dissertation, I've written 6.
Oh, but so I'm way off. Well, okay.
The two big ones are, I mean, occasionally I'll write an academic book. Actually, my last book was academic and I don't think it sold more than, you know, 500 copies, but it wasn't intended to. It was written for a really narrow niche. There probably aren't more than 2,000 people in the whole country that are even in the target market for it. But yeah, the two main books I've written are Tribal Leadership and The Three Laws of Performance.
Well, in Tribal Leadership, there's a lot of talk about language and how you speak to your different groups within your tribe, right?
Yeah.
Does the use of this, you know, profanity and sort of the intimate language you're talking about come up in the leadership training that you do? Or is it more just something you do on a one-to-one basis intuitively?
No, it's all about how you build relationships. I mean, there have been a few times that I've been at an event where everybody's, you know, dropping bad words and I'll get up on stage and I make sure it's not being recorded and all that. Mm-hmm. And I'll drop, you know, the F-bomb as the first word and then they'll all cheer. And that's a way of signaling, this is off the record. We're just talking. This isn't going to be a speech. Let's all just be ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, think about it. Is there one other word in the English language or even one sentence that you could convey or that you could utter that would convey what that single word conveys as your first utterance? Like you walk out and say that word, but only in those certain audiences.
Right.
And they know that you are, at least for that moment, you are one of them.
Yeah. Well, and you're either pissed off or very excited. I actually heard someone else talk about this. I cannot remember who it was, but they explained their philosophy on using the F word, and their perspective was use it in a good sentence, something you are effing excited about, as opposed to this effing stinks. And they said that using it in the positive light is much less offensive. I mean, it sort of makes sense that it would be less offensive. But yeah, what's your thought on that with your background in language, using it for good or evil?
Well, I think one of the things we're going to get into either in this part or the other one is what we call the dark side of leadership. Mm-hmm. And let me start with my complaint, where I think leadership as a field is messed up or severely limited, kind of learning disabled, mm-hmm. is that people in leadership tend to only go for aspirations. They talk vision, values, core values, noble cause, and my colleagues and I have contributed to that. So I mean, there's no kind of argument with that. The argument is just, if that's all you have, what about the dark side? What about what you're pissed off about? What about makes you angry? There's a thing about being aspirational is there usually isn't that urgency. People are not in a hurry when they're sitting around contemplating a world at peace. But when they say, wow, this awful thing is happening in the world, like something that I'm very much aware of is the humanitarian crisis in Syria, regardless of what you think about anything in the world, mm-hmm. Donald Trump or radical Islam or anything. What's going on is a humanitarian crisis, the most horrible things that's happened since World War II. Mm-hmm. And the world is not doing very much. And in particular, the United States is not doing very much. And I'm pissed off about that. So you don't get people to mobilize by getting them to imagine the Syrian situation solved. Let's just imagine how good that would be, how nice that would be, how warm that would be. There's no mm-hmm. urgency, but you say, you know, kids are dying in the Mediterranean, for God's sake. I mean, these are people's children. This is the future leaders of the world, these little innocent, beautiful children, and they're dying because the countries, including ours, that can do something about it, are too afraid of the optics of helping people who might be terrorists. And so we're letting children die in the Mediterranean. You know, that's effed up. Mm-hmm. And it has mm-hmm. to stop, right? You hear the urgency in that. So in leadership, we've got to be able to, you know, to draw on both. And so you started off by asking a question that you had interviewed somebody who said, well, you know, use the F word in a good way. I totally disagree with that. You use the F word in whatever way you want, but don't be an ass about it. Mm-hmm. And the people who are asses about it are people who do it indiscriminately. If I ever use, my mother has passed away, but if she weren't, you know, in my life, I never used language around her that she found offensive, because to do it would have dishonored, you know, her role in my life and everything that she stood for. And people shouldn't be asses about it. Don't walk around dropping the F-bomb to everybody you talk to, because you're just going to offend them and you just come across as weird and awkward and not somebody you'd ever want to hang out with, right? Mm-hmm. But done in the right context. It's like garlic. If you cook only with garlic, nobody wants to be around you. If you can season it a little bit with garlic, you're a great cook.
I like that thought. I want to dive into the dark side of leadership. I love that. And there's a specific story I want you to tell, but I want to put some context to the discussion. So,
hey, let me ask you a question. Would you add some context? Because I think we need some context right now.
I will add some context. Thank you, Dave. Here's what I want you to be thinking of as you're telling this story. The podcast is all about getting people to see something that is going to make them take action, something that could be relatively simple to do, but get mm-hmm. them to take action and get results. And when you think of something like leadership seems like a very broad, big topic. Like, I don't know how to just do leadership right now.
Right.
So in the discussion, when we talk about the dark side of leadership and your approach to leadership, I really want you to be thinking of like an action step that the listeners can take away from the conversation. Okay, so now let's dive into the dark side of leadership, because I've heard you talk about this. I know it might even be it is the topic of your next book. It might even be the title. Is that right?
Yeah, we're playing with that. It might be.
Well, yeah, tell us, what is the dark side of leadership? You can't motivate people just with the happy vision of how perfect things will be. So maybe explain a little more detail there.
Yeah, well, so what you said about leadership, we can't just do leadership. That's actually my gripe with leadership is it can be so vast. It's kind of everything. You know, if leadership is, let's see, personal effectiveness, getting a following, mm-hmm. Having a good family life, motivating yourself to do the right thing. All of these are things that often fall in definitions of leadership that people offer. You know, then what isn't leadership? I mean, people actually say part of leadership is taking care of yourself. So
I mean, you're saying that if I eat a low carb diet, that's leadership? Then what isn't leadership? I mean, fixing an ingrown toenail? I mean, it sounds like that's leadership too. So if leadership is everything, then you haven't given me anything to deal with. You've just defined your topic as being the world. So I focus on leadership as just two words, smart action, right? So leadership is all about the actions that you take, but it's not just about taking any action. It's about doing something that's smart. And another way of saying smart is efficient. So one of the best examples, there was a movie that it was kind of on in the background when I was packing for a trip or something. So I'm not actually sure what movie it was, but well, actually here, I have a better clip and I can tell you what movie it is. The scene from Indiana Jones where the original movie where he's running around the city and he's looking for his girlfriend and she's been taken and he's kind of frantic and he sees this guy who pulls out these swords and has clearly been practicing his whole life with the swords.
Yep.
Setup of the scene is that Indiana Jones is going to have to take this guy on and he pulls out his gun and he shoots the guy.
Yeah.
Guy falls dead, and Indiana Jones doesn't even completely look at him. He just puts the gun away, and like that's an efficient action, right?
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying kill somebody, but like here's an example. A lot of people make their businesses to be just like every other business in their category. So I meet people all the time who are coaches. They say, I ask them, what do they do? And they say, I'm a coach. And I say, wow, I've met like a billion of those. How are you different? And then they talk for a really long time, but they don't actually say anything. And what that says to me is, I'm just like all the others, but better. That doesn't communicate anything. So a smart action is to find the one way you are different than all the other coaches and take actions consistent with that. So,
love that.
You know, I have friends that like don't do life coaching. They only do really narrow forms of executive coaching. Like in our company, the kind of the only type of coaching we tend to take on is part of these really big change efforts where the company has to change or it may die. So its existence is on the line. And typically the executives are experiencing all of this pushback and they don't know what to do. So we coach those people, but coach them to do what? Coach them to move things forward. That's the kind of executive coaching we do. So if they bring up the fact that they might get divorced, I mean, that's interesting. We're happy to talk about that, but that's not actually what we do. We don't do divorce coaching. We don't do life coaching. We don't do coaching around job transitions, right? There's a whole bunch of things we don't do. So we just find the one part of coaching that we do really, really, really well, and that's a smart action. So leadership is about smart actions, efficient actions.
You know, I would imagine that people listening, if they've gotten this far, this is something I've thought about a lot with leadership, the topic of leadership. I don't know if everyone who would really benefit from learning about leadership has any inherent interest in the word leadership. Does that make sense? Because when you say smart action, that to me covers a lot more than the typical entrepreneur or business owner's definition of leadership. That talks about efficiency, productivity, like you talked about, personal care, growth. Do you see that as being a problem? And even with the way you position your company, position your books, do you think that you may be reaching far smaller of an audience than you should because of the actual word leadership?
No. So the word leadership has become so general. Like I said, it's like you're talking about the air. And everybody wants to be a good leader. I've never met anyone who says, I don't care about leadership, unless they're living alone. And then those people they don't read books and they don't work in companies. So that's not our market.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody wants to be a good leader. But if you say, I specialize in making you a good leader, typically the reaction on their face is, well, what in the hell does that mean?
Right.
You know, you got to make that really, really specific. And so, you know, efficient actions, it's like these ninja actions. Like I'll give you an example. I'm doing a research study at USC. Remember, I've got my like egghead academic hat.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how many life problems you can solve with one thing, just one thing. And that one thing is sleep. If you get good sleep, you are going to be smarter. You are going to be less angry. You are going to be more tolerant. You are going to have better health. You're probably going to live longer. You are probably going to have lower cholesterol. You're probably going to have lower blood pressure. Your home life will be better. Your kids will like you better. Your employees will like you better. Your salespeople will like you better. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And yet how many people do the short-sighted thing and say, I'm going to work really late into the night, not get good sleep, stare at a blue screen, which tells your brain to wake up. They don't get good sleep. And then they want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on management consulting to try to fix their company. And often I find myself saying, look, 80% of your problems are that you're just kind of a jerk. And the more time that I've seen you, you're a jerk, not because you are a jerk, kind of in your core or at your DNA, because you're not.
You're exhausted.
You haven't had a decent night of sleep in years. Yeah. And then you drink too much coffee to make up for it, which makes you angry, or people do this all the time. They start abusing stimulants, which makes you angry and agitated and irritable. And then nobody wants to talk to you. And you wonder why you're not, why your company isn't making sales. Because they talk to the CEO and people say, wow, that guy's an ass. I don't want to deal with that guy.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean, you know, by an efficient action. And that usually intrigues people. It's like, wow, there are these things that I could do that I really never thought of that are so easy that could change everything. And let me just give you one more. Mm-hmm. And then I'm sure, you know, we'll go in a different direction. People listening to this just want one piece of advice. It's actually get mad about something. You know, get mad. But when you get mad, don't lose your head. And so what I mean by that is when most of us hear the word mad or we hear the word angry, we imagine someone, it's typically a guy because men get angrier than women according to the research, and they blow their top. You know, they throw stuff, they get, you know, potentially violent, they punch a hole in the wall, or they start cursing at the wrong time and they end their career and they end their home life, they end their marriage, and it's over for them. So a lot of us are so afraid of anger because we associate it with losing your head that we miss the fact, you know, that Elon Musk is kind of an angry guy. He's angry about the state of the airlines. The fact that that airplane travel hasn't changed since the 1960s. Where's Moore's Law on airplane travel? The answer is there isn't one. That pisses him off. And how come most of the cars driving around the road are little bombs, you know, with gasoline in them? What a stupid thing to do.
Yeah, he's pissed off.
He's pissed off. So that's what I mean by get mad, but don't lose your head. Elon Musk doesn't really lose his head, but he comes across, if you ever see him, with this slow burn anger. So that gives him a sense of urgency, a focus, gives him more passion than the vast majority of other people.
So do you think one of the questions I was going to ask is some of the common problems or roadblocks people have in becoming or developing their own internal leadership capabilities? Is this the primary roadblock? They don't get mad enough. They look at everything and it's all moonbeams and roses.
I mean, the simple answer is I think yes. I'm not certain yes, but I think yes. Mm-hmm. If you go into a session that's labeled leadership, it's typically going to be a happy, aspirational session. And people leave maybe kind of recommitted and they feel like it's been a good little break from work. And then they look at their messages and they just go right back into doing the stuff that they were, you know, that they were doing before. And if you think about the people who really make things happen, people who make things happen in the business world, people who make things happen in society at large, if you just kind of, you know, forget whether people are good or bad, just think of the people who make change. Mm-hmm. They are almost all pissed off people. So there's something they know that the rest of us haven't figured out. And the problem in big companies is that there are these codes of conduct that get established. Mm-hmm. You know, the fastest way to get fired is to get angry and lose your head. You know, say the wrong thing to the wrong person, and now you're sitting in front of the head of HR, and they say, you know, I could imagine myself saying that, but you said that to the wrong person, and we have to have a zero tolerance on whatever the area is, you're out of here. By that metric, any of the change agents that you think of, from Martin Luther King, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, Mother Teresa, Bill Clinton, Ronald Reagan, they all would have been fired time after time after time after time. And yet these are the people who really change things. So as companies, we don't know how to deal with being mad without losing your head. We talk about boring stuff like competencies and closing the gap on red metrics and turning red metrics yellow and turning yellow metrics green. And, you know, just like stop the madness. What's the problem that our customers are having that nobody's focused on? Let's get really upset about that. So upset that we do something about it. And then we're known as the people who fix their problems.
Yeah, I love this, Dave. And this seems to speak to what is different about how CultureSync goes about leadership training, consulting, and coaching. Is that an accurate statement?
Probably, yeah.
Is there an actual process to this? Like when you go into a company that has brought in your team, and is it usually just you and Carrie, or is there a big team that goes along when you go into a company? How does that look?
Yeah, I mean, it's typically a team. I mean, we're a small company, but we're a pretty high power company. Mm-hmm. So we have, there are three people, well, probably four now, that do the heavy lifting, and one of us goes in as the lead and then the other goes in as a support, but we swap that around among the four. So, and if one person can, let's say, run three engagements, so we can run 12 really large engagements in our company.
Got it.
And I'd say we're probably halfway there right now.
Okay. Okay. And when you go in, is there a very rigid predetermined methodology, like a process that you bring people through? Like, do you need to uncover the good stuff first and then use whatever method you use to get people riled up and help them find that anger and outrage to use in a good way? Or is it kind of organic with every engagement?
Well, it's both. And so the best way to describe that, and I'm going to use a bad word, but it's a word set with quotation marks around it. Mm-hmm. So Charlie Parker was this famous jazz musician, and someone once asked him, how do I become a great jazz musician like you? And he and I'm paraphrasing him here, except for the last thing, which you'll know because it's got a bad word in it. He said, there are three things you do to become a great jazz musician. Number one is you learn the instrument. Person said, great, I can do that. Number two, you got to learn all the songs. Person said, great, I can do that. And the third thing, this is quotations around it, forget all that shit and jam.
I love that.
And that's how you do this. And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, CultureSync's pretty successful. I've had some good fortune in my life. But what they don't realize is I have never not been in school as either a student or as a professor. Since my mom dropped me off in preschool, I've never not been in school. And when most of the world is asleep at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, I'm reading academic journal articles, mm-hmm. which are boring as you know what. You know, like, why do I do that? Because I know that having read those, I'm going to be sitting in a meeting with somebody and they're going to say, our problem is this. And I'm going to say, here's exactly what you need to do. Because there's been this study, and based on the study, you should do X. And they say, nobody's ever told us that before.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there is a process. There's stuff you learn, you know, formally in business school. There are processes, there are procedures, there are protocols, there are lists. And you should know all that. The reality is the great people, the people who are masters in their field, typically do those things instinctively because they've done them for so long that they've fully integrated them, or they're not really aware of them. They just kind of think they're, you know, sort of responding to the environment. But they're, you know, they're masters. So how do you become a master? First, you learn the craft, and at some point, you forget all that shit and jam.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. Before we wrap up, we circled around this a little bit, but the dark side of leadership story, which I absolutely love, and it just makes it crystal clear what you're talking about when you talk about having a good side and a dark side. Can you tell the Captain Kirk story?
Yeah,
I love that.
So it's an episode from the original Star Trek episode, and it's one that I just found was kind of working on me while I was working on this dark side stuff. So Kirk is on some planet and he gets beamed up and there's a transporter accident. So he materializes, and as soon as he appears on the transporter pad, he suddenly becomes weak. He almost falls over. And so they grab him and they take him out to sick bay. And now the transporter room is empty. And when no one is there to see it, a second Captain Kirk appears, who you quickly discover is evil Captain Kirk. He's the one with Kirk's bad desires, if you know the word id from Freud. It's mm-hmm. Kirk's id. It's all the bad stuff. I think at some point he tries to assault a woman, probably to get somewhere with her sexually, and he's very angry. He can't control his temper. But the good Kirk, right, the patient Kirk, the nice Kirk, the kind Kirk, if you will, the leadership Kirk, mm-hmm. has actually lost the ability to lead. And there's a point where Spock says, this is fascinating. If we can see past the, you know, the urgency of the situation, this tells us something very important about leadership. Leadership is integral to the part of humanity that you don't like. And I think that's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. The leaders are the ones that have more capacity to tap into their dark side than the other people have. The irony is, if you decide you want to become a good leader and you read 100 books picked at random in the field, they're mostly going to be books that talk about your higher self, your core values, your vision, your ideal vision for the world, things like that. They're not going to get into what just royally pisses you off. But that's actually where the good stuff, the juice of leadership lives. It's in the dark side.
And I love that story. Thanks for the recap there. For someone who may not be very familiar with their dark side or may not actively seek within themselves what they're royally pissed off about, what can they do? What's an actual practical exercise that they can do to sort of wake up this part of themselves to be a stronger leader?
Yeah. The simplest thing you can do, and probably the fastest thing you can do let me back up a step. What you just said, the vast majority of people in companies, when they hear what you and I have been talking about, their reaction is going to be, yeah, I'm not really one of those people. I don't really have a big dark side. You know, I don't really get mad. I don't really get angry. I'm pretty sort of low key. And the reason they say that is because in the world of big companies, which includes nonprofits and government, we have made everything except vanilla bad. And so people have these very tight kind of reins on themselves. And as weird as it sounds, they get mad all the time, but they don't remember it. It's this moment like a kind of flash anger, but it actually doesn't leave a memory trail. And like, I'll give you an example. I was actually writing about this subject and I was on a train and I was going from San Jose, where I had done a dinner for some people in the tech world, to Sacramento, where I was doing a program for government people, you know, two completely different mindsets, right? Tech and government. Sacramento, if people don't know, is the capital of California. And every time this train stopped, the woman came on the PA system and said, if you want something to eat, then go to our cafe cart because we've got freshly ground coffee. And this message went on for like a minute, and I'm sitting here trying to work on a book, and that thing comes on, and I keep getting really irritated. And I'm actually writing about anger, and I'm actually kind of, you know, thinking to myself, I'm actually not somebody who gets angry, right? I'm thinking that about me, and I'm writing this book. Mm-hmm. And as I'm thinking that, the train stops, and this voice comes on the PA system, and I get instantly outraged. Like, it's not just anger, it is outrage. And I think, oh, that's silly. You know, she's just doing it for the well-being of the people who just got on the train, plus Amtrak's trying to make a few extra bucks, no big deal. And I basically immediately kind of repressed it, except for the fact that I was writing a book about it. So I typed into my manuscript what had just happened. I wrote a little paragraph about it. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't think anything more of it. I went on and I was working on stuff. And then later that night, I was in Sacramento Hotel, and I was looking over my notes that I had written on the train, and I came across that paragraph, and I was shocked to realize that unless I had found that paragraph, I never would have remembered that upset me, even though I was writing a book about it, right? And so what do? You keep what's called an outrage log. And all I mean by that is, if you're upset about something, it's going to go away in probably 2 seconds, literally 2 seconds. Maybe three. You have to write a note about it, just a word or two on a post-it note. What upset you? And if you don't write it down or put it in a text or something, it's gone, right? Or do a OneNote, you know, entry about it. It's gone. And then later, when you recall it, ask yourself the question, what core value did that moment violate? Because the fact that it outraged you, yep, because something was violated. So what was violated for me on the train? It's actually the need to be efficient. You know, I only have a limited amount of time to work on books, and these stupid PA system, you know, announcements were robbing me of my time to do something that's going to make hopefully a big addition to the world, right? If we can get dark side of leadership out there, it's going to be a big deal.
Yep.
It's going to be a big deal for people. It's going to be a big deal for companies. It's going to be a big deal for the stock market. It's going to be a big deal for the world. And that's what upset me. It wasn't the announcement. It wasn't just that I found it repetitive. It's that I had the sense of theft, right? The theft of time. And because time had been stolen, my ability to make an impact had been diminished. That's what outraged me. And when you can grab that, the core value that, if violated, makes you really upset, then you start looking around in the world for, where do I see that? And in my case, I go to big companies. I think big companies limit their impact all the time. I can't not do something about the fact that life in most companies is impotent and lame. I can't not. I'm called to do that because I find it so offensive.
Yeah.
So that's the action.
Okay. So I love that. I want to point out two things there. One is you explained this very strange human tendency to forget things that may paint yourself in a light that you don't see yourself in. Is that right? An accurate interpretation of that? So that in itself is really fascinating. And I want to ask you why you think our brains do that. But also, before we do that, I want to point out that that's a really great way to identify one of your core values. In that anger moment, do you think it's always a core value violation when you get angry, when those moments happen? Is it pretty consistent that it is a core value of yours that is being infringed upon or violated in some way, and that's what makes you so ticked off?
Yeah, if you're truly outraged, it's a core value. If you're just irritated, that's probably not a core value. So if you get bad service in a restaurant, you're probably not outraged, you're probably just frustrated. But an outrage is, although it may not last very long, it's a really deep kind of anger. I don't mean an anger that's going to make you lose your cool. It's an anger that you're kind of shocked. It's almost like an electric shock has gone through you about the depth of it. That's what you want to write down.
Got it. Yeah, that's fascinating. I like that, an outrage log. And why do you think that's human nature? Like, why, if that's so important for us to recognize those moments of outrage and actually embrace them, why do you think we forget those moments?
Well, we're storytelling creatures. It's how we make sense of the world. We tell each other stories all the time, and we tell ourselves stories. And you edit things out in a story that don't contribute to the story. So when you tell yourself a story about who you are, most people, if they're professional and successful, tell themselves a story that they are calm and cool and logical and intelligent. Mm-hmm. So they leave out the part of the story that's inconsistent with that. And whatever you leave out of your story, you forget. That's it.
And have you looked into this on a scientific level? Because I know it's a neat observation you made where you had the moment, you wrote it down, you circled back around. But is there actually some neuroscience behind this that you have looked into?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so much of it. So most of the neuroscience stuff that's out there is pretty thin. It's a couple studies and people make these wild jumps. Mm-hmm. If you look at people's EEGs, well, let me not tell you about people. Let me tell you about mine. On my EEG, I have a spike that happens a little bit of time after my brain observes something. And that spike is actually kind of a second guessing mechanism. And most successful people have that spike. They are observing themselves. That spike tends to be kind of anger inducing. So, I mean, there are brain waves of people who are successful. We have more alpha waves, which means we're probably smarter. We're probably more focused on problem solving rather than complaining about the problem solving. And then there are these spikes where people are observing themselves and finding tremendous dissatisfaction in something about that moment. Hmm. And I mean, this happens, you know, it's over and over and over on a brain scan. If you do something called an FFT analysis of an EEG, you can actually spot the spike. It happens over and over and over and over. And it's not under conscious control. So people who are kind of, you know, doing well in life tend to have rather specific EEGs, and you can see it happen in people's brainwaves.
No kidding. Well, I want to get some info on that and put it in the show notes because it sounds interesting. Where do you get that done?
Yeah, I'm going to have to take the fifth on that one. I'm involved. No, I'm involved in a research study that's connected with USC with the Keck School, and we're in the early stages, but the data is really compelling.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. So I will not put that in the show notes.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Well, Dave, I'm going to wrap up here because I want to save a few questions for the next episode where we dive into a few more of your personal habits and how you manage your time and energy. So if you're listening and you want to hear more about Dave's own personal habits, what has allowed him to achieve the success he has. Make sure you're tuned into that. But I just want to do a quick recap. We went over a lot of good stuff here. We talked about the dark side of leadership and how leadership is really about taking smart action. You mentioned something that you notice in the world that something to watch out for people. If you have a business or are a coach, avoid the pitfall of just looking like everyone else, making sure you have one way, one very specific, tangible, explainable way that you're different. I like the point about, you know, it's not always a huge puzzle you need to solve. Sometimes you just need to start with the basics, like getting more sleep. And I'm sure there are a lot of people listening here that work and work and work and work to get ahead more when maybe they should be slowing down a little bit, going to sleep at 9:30 and actually getting a good rest so they're more effective and efficient during the day. I loved your point about getting mad, but not losing your head, you know, and that mad, that anger, that maybe not anger, but that outrage about something, you should learn to harness that and recognize it by keeping an outrage log. Because once you recognize that, you can use that to your advantage to become a stronger leader and be more aspirational, more motivational than just someone who's looking at the bright side of life and trying to be all positivity, doesn't have the strong leadership qualities that many of the world's leaders had that you mentioned. I think those are my notes that I have here. Also just that outrage, we didn't have time to jump into core values. It's a whole nother discussion, but I really like that for anyone listening who's done some work on their core values. I like the insight that you brought up about when you do get outraged, that's a way to see one of your true core values is being violated. So it's a very interesting way to identify that and start learning more about who you are and what the core values are that have driven you to where you are today. Is there anything else you wanted to cover, Dave? Is there anything you're working on right now at CultureSync that you want to mention? Maybe a little more clarity on the book or what you're doing as a business right now before we wrap up?
Well, just the super quick thing is we are really involved in healthcare because healthcare needs to, whenever you mention healthcare, people hear politics and we're nonpartisan, but we in healthcare have to move from one business model to another really fast. And so that's specifically what we're focused on doing. And a big part of that is creating a sense of outrage about how our system works right now compared to its potential. I mean, we're not taking care of our own people. Mm-hmm. And we're not taking care of people with money. We're not taking care of people without money. We are, as a system, failing the country. We're causing bankruptcies and we're causing budget deficits and we have to do something about it. So I would just say if anybody's interested in healthcare, give us a shout out.
Yeah. And what's the best way for people to reach you in CultureSync?
They can go on our website. It's CultureSync, which is SYNC.net. Again, culture, SYNC.net.
And for those of you listening who have not been there, there are dozens, I think, of tools, personal assessments, right? You have a lot of material on there that people can download for free and start engaging with. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, fantastic. All right, well, thanks so much, Dave. Really appreciate it, and we will see you on the next episode.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening today. Before you go, I want to leave you with three important questions designed to get you results from what you just heard. Number one, what one lesson did you just learn that you can take action on? Two, what single action can you commit to doing in the next 24 hours to integrate this skill, habit, or mindset into your daily life? And three, what can you do to ensure you will actually take this action? Speed of implementation is the key to success, and you have got to take action on what you just learned. Perhaps you need to put a reminder in your calendar, put a post-it on your computer screen, or talk to an accountability partner to check in to make sure you did this. Whatever you do, make sure you take action on the one key thing you learned from this episode to make sure you start seeing results. You deserve the success and peace of mind that comes from building a profitable and influential business that truly matters. You deserve it. Your family deserves it. The world deserves the best business, products, and services you have to offer. The thing is, sometimes it's hard to take action on your own, which is exactly why we've created the Luminary Business Community at luminarybusiness.com. If you want to be part of this thriving community of entrepreneurs and executives committed to building profitable and influential businesses, head over there and sign up for our waiting list. As a member, you will get training, checklists, cheat sheets to grow your business fast. You'll get access to exclusive in-person events and meetups. You'll get expert coaching from me and other experts in the group and feedback when you need it most. Fourth, you'll have access to a supportive community of like-minded entrepreneurs. Finally, if you liked what you heard on the show, please subscribe to the podcast, write a review on iTunes, or share a link to this episode with one of your friends. It will help them learn and will also spark conversations that could potentially lead to new business for you, which is what this entire show is about. Thanks for listening, and make it a great one.